Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
So, let me ask you a question. What kind of world do you want to live in? What do you want Earth to look like? Yeah, well, maybe let's flip it over a little bit. What would a fabulous Earth look like? Well, Earth is a pretty big term. Let's get a little more specific. What would be a delightful place for you to live? What would your neighborhood look like? What would your home look like? Now, let go of the past. Let go of the past and think, what kind of a world do I want to live in? What kind of a city? What kind of a dwelling? How do I interact with the people around me? How do I interact with my neighborhood? What does that look like? It's a the understatement of the year. It's a really curious time to be alive because so much is on the table. I mean, we've kind of been handed a really powerful opportunity with all this upheaval. We can decide new things that perhaps were out of our reach just 4 or 5 years ago. In other words, 4 or 5 years ago, we had such a momentum, such an established, rigid idea of what, quote, normal life looks like. But now, if everything's up in the air, that's a wonderful opportunity to make a change. But how can we make a change that supports us, that nurtures us? And that's why I ask the question, what looks good to you? What supports you? What nurtures you? I think we're going to have a delightful conversation tonight. Tonight the topic is Earth and Soul, Reconnecting Amid Climate Chaos, and our guest tonight is Leah Rampe. We're going to bring her on in just a minute. But I think it's really kind of important that we give this some thinking. If we give this some feeling, what would our hearts want? Is the world my ego wants the same as the world my heart wants? Have you ever asked your heart what it wants? What would that look like? We're creating our future moment by moment, day by day, and we kind of vote. We kind of vote for what we're going to have by how we behave every day. You know, I think we're going to have a good time. I think we should get to it. Again, the topic tonight is Earth and Soul, Reconnecting Amid Climate Chaos. Our guest tonight, Leah Rampe, has written a book, Earth and Soul, and the writing comes at an intersection of spirituality, ecology, and story. Leah illuminates the path to reweaving nature and soul. Nature and soul. I love those two words. Nature and soul. What would our souls want for our future? That's a good question. Under her deft guidance, the beauty and genius of this sacred world unfolds before us. Even now, when the world as we knew it is ending and a new story lies beyond, what we can envision, we may live fully alive and lay stepping stones towards a diverse and vibrant world of oneness and mutual flourishing. Our guest tonight, after giving numerous presentations on the dangers of impending climate change, Lea Rampe became convinced that something was missing from the conversations. With experience as a teacher, professor, corporate and nonprofit executive, and a leadership consultant, she began decades-long journeys to understand what lies beneath our unwillingness to change our interaction with the natural world. Her growing commitment to reweaving soul and earth, I love that, has been informed by leading over a dozen pilgrimages and many more retreats, extensive reading and research, her contemplative practice, and the wisdom of the living world. I think we're going to have a wonderful conversation tonight. Let's get to it. So then, join me in welcoming Lea to the show. Welcome to the show, Lea.
Well, thank you so much, Les. I'm really happy to be here.
Earth and Soul, Reconnecting Amid Climate Crisis. I've been fascinated by the nature of nature, if you will, how incredibly graceful nature is. I mean, if you take the chaos, perhaps, of the human element out of nature, or perhaps stop randomly out in the wilderness and walk out where man has not gone before, nature has no problem with itself. I don't think nature's ever been broken as a mechanism. But with the heavy hand of humanity, I mean, we literally built out a nuclear arsenal that could end life on Earth. The human element can have a very profound effect on nature. How did you share the story with us about how Earth and nature has become such a prominent part of your life?
Well, thank you for that question, because I think it's an important one for me to keep reflecting on. I feel like in my childhood that I was very connected, and I think many children are. You know, we come to the living world around us with lots of curiosity and open hearts and ready to be amazed and curious and fall in love and all of that. Somewhere along the line, it's easy to have that layered over with anything from perhaps the way we're taught to think about the world around us to, you know, having very busy lives. And I've had that journey too. You know, I spent a lot of time working in the corporate world and having jobs where I would walk downstairs in my house, get in the car, drive to work, park in a parking garage, take the elevator up, go to work, and I could spend days without ever really being out of doors. So that said, though, I feel like there was always this longing to be more connected to the world around me. I have a passion for trees. I say sometimes that I think I'm so passionate about trees because I grew up in Kansas and there were so few of them. So I really valued the ones that were there. But I just really felt a longing to be connected when I was away from being outdoors for a long time. So this is part of that, you know, that's kind of a personal journey of wanting to come back to a deeper connection. And that's also, I also had a personal journey of becoming increasingly concerned about the climate, first of all, and then biodiversity loss, losing ecosystems. giving talks about that, wondering why nobody would change, and gradually came to believe, and I still believe, that we have kind of forgotten the connections that we do have and separated ourselves from Earth, which is then allows us to do some of the things you were talking about, right? If Earth is not an animate being, if Earth doesn't matter, if it's simply a resource to be consumed, if it's all about what can you do for us, you know, then it's very easy to make that justification that, you know, why don't we cut down the forest to have more toilet paper that we like? So that's a little, that's a bit wondering, but that's kind of the way that I have journeyed to come to this place to try to understand what does it mean to live in these really challenging times and being connected to Earth.
Right. Well, the 2020 whirlwind kind of put a lot of us in a kind of a isolated cocoon, metaphorically, in that we didn't have the chit chat around the, you know, in the break room at work. We didn't go out with friends after work. We kind of lost a connection amongst ourselves in a way. And I think there's a component or an element, perhaps, of individuals and thus an aspect of ourselves collectively where we've lost the connection. Now, I could say human connection, but I want to just spin it around a little bit. So if I were to daydream like two people unrelated, and because of 2020, they holed up in their homes and they didn't get out much and kind of lived in their head, so to speak, and were not in the communion or communication mode. And then here we are years later and they come together. There's like a missing component of themselves. And what I'm getting at here is, and maybe this would apply to with people with depression or whatnot, but here in Colorado, I live next to this Rocky Mountain range that has these fantastic mountains. And if we were to get out in nature, having lived in our own bubble, what I'm getting at here is not only seek to restore a connection with humanity, but why don't we start off by reconnecting with nature in that to bring ourselves into harmony, if you would. How do you see the effects of connection with nature for if a person's been isolated and then they go and maybe they go on a 3-week hike across the mountains of Colorado, how would that influence them? I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is how does nature nurture us when we commune with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's so many things that you said there that have triggered various thoughts for me. I'll try not to lose track of where you really went with the question. But I just want to put a note in there that even before COVID-19, the Surgeon General had declared that loneliness was at epidemic proportions. And there are so many links, and you referred to that, between loneliness and poor health, mental and physical. So with that being a backdrop, and then you overlay COVID, it really was very difficult for people to be so separated from other humans. Perhaps their main source of connection was with people they worked with, and now there was not that sort of downtime opportunities at the coffee pot to be able to have a conversation. So that was missing for individuals. I think we feel the same kind of loneliness when we are not connected to nature. So many people found solace in being outdoors during the time of COVID. They could not be connected to others in the way they were used to. They were missing the interaction, but also probably the physical touch. Whereas the forests, the trails, the botanical gardens, the parks were places that people could go. There's all sorts of studies that show the ways in which we feel better, which is what you were alluding to and the question you were asking, that we feel better when we are walking in an old growth forest. And you could be scientific about the aerosols that are being released and how that, triggers certain responses in us. And you could also just simply say that there's kind of a joy and a delight in seeing the beauty around us, that when we are in the presence of awe and wonder, we lose this sense of our self-importance and some of those things that felt really heavy for us can kind of fall away because it's not all ego-centric in the way we might have been when we started our walk along the trail. So there's a whole host of reasons, I think, that we are aided in our health and well-being when we're out in the living world. I think the question that's also interesting is nature happier when we're among her? And that gets debated frequently by people who are worried about whether we're all going to become extinct. And there certainly are people who are saying, well, we're going to be better off if we're just all gone. I think we could understand why people would say that. But we also know that many native cultures were really an incredibly important part of cultivating forests and beaches and estuaries that was not simply left alone. So there's, I think, a great potential for us to back up and say, wait a minute, what does it really mean to be connected to nature? And is it really even possible for us to be disconnected? Or have we just forgotten the depth of our connection?
Nice. Well, and if you imagine 2019, it's quite easy to see to imagine a very common lifestyle where, like you say, you go in the garage, get in the car, drive to work, go to a club afterwards, have some drinks, go home and crash, go to a football game, go to a theater, and none of that really has a genuine, I guess, soul of nature. And so 2020 comes along and the cart tips over. And like we've mentioned, people feel a disconnection with each other. But maybe that's a good metaphor to show us how we've also disconnected with nature itself. I don't know. To me, it seems like we've gotten so far down the rabbit hole. There's so many different ways that humanity inflicts its will, if you will, on nature. What would happen if we let go, if the human persona, the human intellect, the human academics, let go of nature and let it do what it does, because it can certainly exist without humans. It doesn't need our advice in any way. And heal humanity's relationship with nature and get that reconnected, and then go back and connect. I mean, it could happen simultaneously, but then, in other words, if we, the people, go out in nature and heal our relationship with harmony, elegance, peace, you know, which are all elements of what you might find in an old growth forest, and we heal ourselves with our relationship with nature, because as I suggested in 2019, even though we were, air quotes, living the life, we weren't really in harmony with nature. I like the idea of to put nature front and center. And as I'm talking, I'm hearing thunder outside. So nature's trying to have a say in this. But
that sounds like that's the truth, yeah.
But the idea is we would probably like ourselves better if we were to heal at a deeper level, heal our relationship with nature, if that makes sense.
Well, it does make sense, and that is exactly what I'm purporting could really be an important step for us individually and collectively. You know, my sense is that there's an outward journey and an inward journey. There's an outward journey to reconnect to the world that's around us, and we could just start that very locally. You know, it could just be within our backyard or a nearby garden, or you know, on a trail that's somewhere around our neighborhood. Listening, looking, understanding, trying to learn, getting out of our heads so we're trying to solve problems. You know, there's lots of studies that forests left alone heal much better than when we try to intervene,
right,
to fix them in the way that we think they are supposed to be fixed.
Nice.
Because nature has an incredible amount of resiliency. In fact, I think we have a tremendous amount we could learn from the world around us, not only about resiliency, but certainly about connection. I mean, you want to talk about who understands how we connect. What about that, you know, what they've now learned to call the wood wide web, the mycorrhizal, you know, the fungal network that's connecting the trees. I mean, the science that has been brought to the fore by people like Suzanne Simard and Marilyn Sheldrake fairly recently is just astonishing and miraculous about the depth of connection. There's a lot that Earth could teach us about that. And certainly there are many ways that we could connect more deeply. But we need to do that on Earth's terms and not on human terms.
Nice.
So, you know, that means there's a little humility that has to replace our hubris. So we have to take ourselves off of the top of the, you know, the pile and say, no, you know, we are among the youngest beings in this evolutionary process here. So what can we learn from those who have been here far, far longer than we? So to me, that's kind of the outward journey. And simultaneously, the inward journey is this sense of who am I and who am I? Who have I always been? What is my truest self? And how does that relate to all the beings around me? And I think in many ways, we have so layered over you were giving an example of how life might have been in 2019 and what how we might have said we were, quote, living the life. And yet, if we look at the addictions, whether that's, you know, food or drink or drugs or shopping.
Sure.
You know, there's this underlying sense that maybe all is not so well, even though we were living as we thought we always wanted to. You know, the corner office might not really hold the magic that we thought it would when we finally arrived there.
Nice.
So, yeah. So I think it's, you know, there's some opportunities for us to adventure and to venture both inward and outward, you know, making those connections. And I think as we connect more deeply to, let's just say a forest, because I love forests and,
sure.
You know, how could you not? So let's say we connect more deeply to a forest. We're also revealing more of ourselves. We're becoming more in tuned with what is important to us. Perhaps maybe why we're here, what we're invited to be offering, you know, what gifts can we give back to the forest in exchange for breathing?
Right.
You know, I mean, there's such a depth, so many gifts that we're given all the time. So what is it we want to give back?
Well, I like what you said about, I think it was studies showed that what we might see, I'm just ad-libbing what I recall the conversation to be, that, you know, in our academic minds, well, we can restore nature if we do X, Y, Z, and yet studies show that if we just stay out of it, there tends to be a quicker, more graceful recovery. Maybe the conundrum is our minds itself. Maybe nature's not as anxious to connect with our minds as much as it would much rather have a connection with our heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I've tried to say that in a variety of ways in the book. You know, nature, we love our minds and they're very important. And, you know, there's a lot of good that comes out of our minds. The problem is that let me just speak for myself, that I spent so many years refining and trying to, you know, be intelligent, be wiser, to be articulate, to think logically and rationally. And there's nothing wrong with that unless that's all you're doing, right?
Right.
Because then I'm not connecting to you heart to heart. And we know that that's a viable way of connection. We know that anytime we sit in a room with someone who has suffered a deep loss and we don't even need to say anything, we just simply look at that person and we see their deep distress or their utter grief, and we can feel ourselves tear up because our hearts are connecting in that way to mirror what is going on in front of us. Somehow, you know, so ironic when I'm trying to explain a book that I've written, but, you know, yeah, I'm just going to name the irony, because somehow we try to put everything into words. And I think that part of our journey is to reclaim maybe our childlike sense of, you know, touch and feel and hearing and smell and just tuning in the senses, tuning to the heart rhythm. Listening to our gut. We have those terms, you know, but we don't somehow those, I don't know, I've, you know, found that quite often they're derided. you know, try to think more logically. So that's a part of it. I think you're absolutely right. I think we have to stop trying to language everything for sure. The trees are not going to speak to us in English. So, you know, if we want to, how do we understand what a forest would like from us? How do we understand whether we're being asked to just stop further intervention or plant some of the species that have been destroyed, or pull out some of the invasive multiflora rose or whatever? How do we understand that? We can't understand that in English.
Right. Well, the information from nature, probably, like you said so well, that we're not going to get an email from Mother Nature saying, do this, do that.
Right.
Now, you've got, I'm looking at the titles of the chapters. You have Coming to Our Senses, and I love that. And you've been talking about our senses, about how we connect with nature, and it's through our senses. And then the next chapter talks about dancing with grief and joy. Maybe if we slow down everything we've been pushing down in our psyche, maybe we were in the hurry, hurry, scurry, scurry to avoid feeling our senses, or perhaps feeling some deeper grief or anguish within us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe part of what it takes to reconnect with nature, and your book's talking about it straight up, dancing with grief and joy, do you think nature is a natural harmonizer, or a natural balancer, or a natural, you know, like doctor, metaphorically, in the sense that by going out into nature, the incongruencies within ourselves have a much better opportunity to be resolved?
Well, maybe. Let me tell you kind of how I think about this, and let's see if that gets us along this road that you're kind of traveling here. See if we connect on this journey.
Sure.
So I think there's no doubt that if we look at what is going on around us and the way we have decimated forests, since we're talking about them, the incredible loss of species, the oceans that are filled with plastic. I mean, we can go on and on. I won't name them even, you know, to any greater degree than that, to simply say, how can we not feel grief? How could we possibly not feel grief unless we numb ourselves and try to look away? If we're looking at what really is, we have to feel a sadness. There are people, obviously, who have lived generations in West Virginia, where I'm living now, have lived generations in the shadow of a mountain, who's been decimated. Mountaintop removal has huge, enormous, unbelievable machines taking apart a mountain. And what is that like if that has been what you and your family have walked on, hunted on, ate from, saw out your window day in and day out for generations? There's loss, but we all have some version of that, because we have changed the world as we knew it even 30, 40, 50 years ago. So grief is here, and it will continue, because even if we were to stop releasing all the CO2 today, even if we were to stop doing anything that harms various species and ecosystems, so much is built into the system already that we will have generations of loss. My argument is we have to look at that with eyes open. We have to see that, and we have to let our hearts crack open so they are large enough to hold that grief. Because if we numb ourselves to grief, we are also numbing ourselves to joy. And my sense is that when we can look fully into the face of loss, we can also see where there is still beauty and joy and awe and wonder that is present. And that is the way that I am thinking about dancing with both of those ends of the spectrum, we might think. But the way that I think about that is, I often, and I say that in the book, if you wrote all the things that cause you grief on one side of a long, slender piece of paper, and then you flipped it over and you wrote all the things that gave you joy, and then you take those two and you're going to put them together, but make that final twist before you do that makes it into a Mobius strip, they're inseparable. You can't just open yourself to awe and wonder and deny the losses any more than you can just wallow in the losses and not also feel the joy. So my sense of dancing with those two is to be fully present to what is, and to, you're talking earlier kind of about the medicine of the living world. You know, what medicine does nature provide? And certainly I would say awe and wonders and beauty are pretty spectacular medicines for us.
Nice. Nice. Well, I really like what you've said there, how grief and joy are two sides of the same piece of paper, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we sit here and talk, to like you said so well, we've kind of, I mean, the media, or if the media is the portal that we see the world through outside of us, I mean, we live in our little cocoon lives, just metaphorically, and we go online and we get news, and we turn on the television and we get news, and sometimes what we need to see is not presented there, but I'm saying to reclaim our ability to feel sad when we see the loss of nature, and like you've been saying, come out of our numbness, come out of our indifference, and to see nature as an integral part of us. If I sit here, I've thought about this many times. I'm a big guy, and I have all these atoms that make up my body. Where the hell were all these atoms when my mom and dad were making whoopee to make me? What I'm getting at is my body is Mother Earth personified.
Mm-hmm.
I kept eating the gifts of Mother Earth, and my body grew. And to not lose that connection, I think big tragedy happens if we vacate our heart and we go up completely in the mental space. I really like what you're saying. I mean, the coming to our senses, feeling ourselves, and we can't feel the exquisite joy without feeling the decisive grief, so to speak. So you also have a chapter named Reclaiming Your Soul. It seems like that healing process would also perhaps connect us with even a bigger sense of ourself as our soul. Is that what you're talking about there?
Yes, yes. And by soul, I'm simply meaning the true essence of who we are, before we covered it all over with thinking about how we might win friends, influence people, make a lot of money, live in a fabulous house, you know, which doesn't seem for most of us, when examined more closely, is actually leading to a high level of satisfaction. So who indeed were we, you know, were we designed to be? What's our purpose here? And I do think sometimes we can get lost in that. You know, mystics and religious people through the century have talked about the dark night of the soul, when you can't figure out anything. It all just seems, everything I've tried before doesn't work, and I feel stuck totally here. And, you know, it, other people talk about going deep into the well,
right,
you know, to understand, going deep into that dark water or deep into the cave to try to understand who and what we are called to. Sometimes we just have to sit there. It's like being on a threshold where we can't go back to what was, and what might lie ahead isn't yet clear, so we don't really understand where we're going, and we have no recourse except to wait there until it's revealed to us. And part of the growing is in the waiting. So it's our impatience that drives us to sort of flail around and keep trying things, because it's so difficult for many of us, and I will add myself in there for sure, so difficult to be in a not knowing place. So I think that's a big part of our journey, is to know when we're called to go forward and when we simply wait until we see what's wanting to unfold. Because my sense is that we're invited into collaborating with the world around us. And in order to know what that is, we kind of have to wait till we see where the woods around us are wanting to go before we try to shape them into some sense of what we think their lives should be like.
So. Well, I wonder if maybe even the structure of our neighborhoods, I mean, the way we build houses, the way we lay out a city, I mean, 2020 did, in a way, it did us a really big favor, and not everyone might see it that way, because it was very painful for a lot of people, but the normal of 2019's gone, and we have yet to really make a new normal.
Yeah.
And I think that affords us an excellent time to get out of our heads, get out of our academic strategies, stand down the mind, so to speak, and heal and open our heart, and then reevaluate how we've been going about things. Because maybe we've been in, you know, like mental or ego overdose mode for centuries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's a great term. I might have to steal that.
Do it.
I think you're right. That ego overdose is a good one, or mental, either one. You know, what that does when we are ego-driven and everything revolves around us, is it's an invitation to othering. And so I then start seeing, because I'm so concerned with my own unique identity, I start seeing how you are different from me. And it's not a huge step to then see how you are lesser than I am, if you are in the way of what I want
Right.
It's almost as if I need to other earth in order to keep living the way that I'm living. Because if I actually stop and see the ways that I'm harming any being that I'm caring about, then I will feel guilty and I will feel sad and I will have to stop shopping, buying, I don't know, make up anything, right? Stop sure. buying new clothes when it, I...
Just excess.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, if I become really aware of clothes that are made on the backs of people earning next to nothing and sometimes children, if I really become aware of that, well, dang, then I'm not going to be able to shop in those, you know, places that have really inexpensive clothing, and I won't be able to, change out what I'm wearing as frequently as I like, and maybe I won't feel like I'm as stylish, or whatever the story is we tell ourselves. And until we see that incredible harm that we do when we do not see that everything belongs, when we only see through, you know, Leah, through Leah's eyes, this is the most important person, I'm at the top. And I think, we've othered Earth, and it's just for many, many years. And we could go back talking about all sorts of writings that have illuminated the ways in which we have colonized people
right.
and terraformed various sections of Earth for the sake of what we wanted from that particular region. It's just easy to keep doing it because
right.
we have to admit we're wrong if we stop and really sink into that soul place where we're looking from heart.
As we're talking here, it's one of the things that did come out of 2020 is working from home. And what I'm getting at is corporations and perhaps even industries have learned that we don't have to all accumulate in the same building day after day. And maybe that is a piece of the puzzle that helps us, I guess the sense I get is spread out and not be so dense in how we live. And it can't help our spirit, our soul, to spend 100% of our time in concrete jungles, the metaphor of big cities. And like I said, 2020 really kind of afforded new models of doing commerce. I think this affords us a chance to take a new look from our heart, take a new look from the impulse of our soul, perhaps, about how we structure our societies. You have a title in your book, Collaborating with the Living World. If we build our communities around that, that'd be a good start.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We were having this conversation in a book group today. It's almost impossible to build a place to live without impacting. Well, it probably is impossible without impacting the trees, the land, the beings that are there. Yet there are potentially ways to do that are less destructive than others, where we really intend to minimize our our impact, where we are aware that that is what's going to happen, that we're going to impact land. So I live in a co-housing community. There are 30 homes here that are grouped in duplexes and triplexes, and they're all very close together. And they're intentionally close together so that the rest of the land that we bought to build these homes, so the rest of the land could be left in conservation. So we have about 8 acres in conservation. If you were going to build 30 homes generally on, let's say, 15 acres of land, you would probably spread them out so that you had 2 homes, right?
Right. I mean,
every home would get a half acre.
Right.
And instead, we've clumped them together. Now, I think our homes are very attractive. I'm not at all complaining about that. But we have very postage stamp size yards, if you will.
Sure.
But we've kept in common this land that is preserved, or the land that's our community garden, or the land that might be a place we could play, you know, bocce ball or badminton, so that there is less impact on the land around us. I'm not holding this up as a paragon of virtue, but simply to say that when you can put those kinds of questions earlier on in the planning, then you can wrestle with them more readily than if we, which is what I think you're suggesting, you know, so we're not just going on business as usual. Let's just keep going the way we've always been going, but put a pause button here to
right.
say, okay, pause. What else is possible? What can we do differently? What might be a less harmful way of engaging with water, air, land, than just simply business as usual? Because we know business as usual is pretty darn harmful. So yes to what you're saying. Whenever we can put that pause button and get our, you know, my needs over all other needs out of the way, or actually a lot of times it's not even needs, is that it's wants. You know, we think it's our wants, what we want.
It seems like for generations there was this, I guess I'd call it a white picket fence mindset. A white picket fence where, you know, go to school, get a degree, get a job, get a house, put out that white picket fence, click off a few decades, retire, right? Because as we're talking here, one of the things I've noticed, and maybe it's more common than I think, because I see hints of it online, and that's the idea of a nomad or a traveler. I know people who don't own a home. They don't. And they live out of a vehicle, and they just drive around, and that's just fine with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I'm getting at is if we're looking at structures that are maybe incongruent, so we have this substance, I guess I call it humanity. We have humanity, and we've been kind of pushing the whole of it into this idea of a white picket fence where we all kind of get in line and march through the process. And maybe even that itself is part of what keeps us incongruent with nature. In other words, maybe it's time for a more diverse idea where we have multiple ideas of life paths, and not such a collective idea of life paths, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think we can invite younger generations to be as creative as they want to be and just get out of their way. Because, you know, we kind of, the older we are, the more, the less sort of pushing at the edges about things like that, I think, that we do. Although I will say that I have met a number of retirees who are, you know, working in national parks as their retirement plan, and they pack up their camper and they go to a national park for a summer and then they go to another one the next summer. And, you know, so right. I don't want to be ageist about this, because I want to say some of us who are older have, you know, have pushed an envelope or two as well. And I think we also have to get out of the way of the younger generation who's pushing creatively the boundaries and encourage that instead of, you know, keeping, like you're saying, keeping our little squares of things have always been the way they are and therefore you should.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, an hour can go by pretty fast. I want to touch on one last topic. You have a chapter in your book called Choosing Stories for the Future.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
So I begin by saying that the way that I'm speaking of stories in this case is you and I are in a meeting and I say something that cuts you off. You know, you're speaking and I'm interrupting and I just go right over it and you make up a story about me in that real time, right? You make up a story that says I'm abrasive or I never did like you or I'm, you know, filled with ego. That's just a really simple and crazy example.
Sure.
We're always making up stories to say how we think the world works. And I think that comes into play in the way I'm writing about it in the last chapter is because I wanted to talk about hope. And that's because I get asked all the time when I lead retreats or offer workshops, well, is there hope? And I think it depends on what story you have created about what hope means.
Nice.
If hope means that we can keep living, there's some magic pill we can take and we can keep living exactly as we have. For let's just say, I don't know how old you are, but let's just say I was around 50 years ago. If we can keep living in the same way we did 50 years ago, and that's what we want to do, then we will be able to do that. If that's what you're hoping for, then I'm saying, no, there isn't hope. If the question is, can there be ways in which we live that brings light and liveliness and joy and leads toward mutual well-being, then I say, yes, there is hope. Well, you might answer, gosh, but, you know, we've destroyed so many ecosystems. We've destroyed so much of the earth. How can we possibly expect that humanity could even survive? My story is that Earth is animate, Earth is intelligent, Earth is vibrant and leans toward life and living, and so do the beings on Earth, and they hold more surprises than we can possibly know. And so while I don't know what that path is, I'm saying that the story I want to live into is that if I do what's mine to do and you do what's yours to do, that my hope is that we actively build a pathway that can point toward a future of mutual thriving, even if it is beyond our lifetimes.
Very nice. Very nice. Well spoken. Well, Leah, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. I've really enjoyed looking at the topic of your book. I mean, delving into earth and soul to look at the mechanics of the human element as it relates to nature. I think you've written a wonderful book. I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. I've thoroughly enjoyed this episode.
Thank you, Les. I really appreciate it and enjoy your questions and appreciate the opportunity for us to kind of collectively push some edges here.
We've been talking with Lea Rampe, and the topic of tonight's show is the title of her latest book, Earth and Soul, Reconnecting Amid Climate Chaos. What a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed that. I want to be sure you know about her book, Earth and Soul, Reconnecting Amid Climate Chaos. And Lea has a website, leahmorinrampe.com. That is L-E-A-H. MORANRAMPY.com. Be sure to look up her website and learn more about her. What a fun episode. Where humanity goes is up to humanity. What humanity ends up with is up to humanity. We can't have a sustainable future unless we can embody the model of a sustainable future. Nature knows how to do it, and we're a product of nature. There's an inherent wisdom within us, as we are elements of nature. I guess it's becoming mindful, and that's why I keep asking all these questions, is to help you become mindful about what we're choosing. If we're not thinking about it, if we're not feeling about it, it's going to happen at a subconscious level. And a lot of times subconscious means more of the same. But if we can become conscious of it, and that's why I try to stir things up on the show, if you can't tell, so we can become more mindful of our future. I really enjoyed having Lea on the show. Well, I want to thank you, the listener. Here we are at the end of this episode, and here you are too. Thank you for showing up for yourself. We've got some really good shows lined up, so I appreciate you tuning in every week and joining us on this platform. Always a pleasure. This has been a New Human Living broadcast. If you're looking for spiritual resources, there's literally hundreds of podcasts just like this one, free online. You can find them at newhumanliving.com. If you sign up for the newsletter, I write a weekly blog that helps you contemplate the nature of nature, contemplate the nature of your own human genome, contemplate your own human potential. How powerful is that? I can say it's powerful because you are powerful. I want to thank you for joining us in tonight's broadcast. I appreciate you, the listener. Until next time, thanks for listening.